This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, Morgan, I don't believe what I just saw. This is the Hawks Instant Reaction Podcast. I'm Chris Thomas, producer for Dukes and Bell, joined as always by Bo Morgan, executive producer for Dukes and Bell. And before we dive into everything from 26 down to the epic comeback to this city going absolutely bananas on Friday night at State Farm, Bo, I want to give you the floor here because you're a lifelong Atlantan and I just moved here. So I want to know, where does this stand for you in terms of all-time nights in Atlanta sports? Give me your take, sir.
Well, look, we've had some great, despite what people will tell you, we've had some really good history. The Braves run in the 90s was magical, especially in 92 and Sid Slide. You know, the 95 World Series, there were just some great nights in that whole run. The Hawks have had some good history. You know, I remember the loudest I've ever been in the building for a Hawks game, the most intense, was 2008. That was the Celtics championship team. It was game six. At the time, it was before they renovated what is now State Farm Arena. And, man, I mean, that place, I remember leaving that place, and it was just – raucous. And then the Falcons have given us great moments. The 2016 NFC Championship game, for me, is the top day. That's the because I was there. I was a part of it. And then, you know, it with the Braves, of course, the 2017 or 18, Atlanta United, they win the MLS. So that was a huge moment, but this is up there. I mean, and look, this is something that this is like breaking down barriers, Chris. Like, we blow leads in Atlanta. We don't overcome them, and not big ones. And that's why this is so monumental. This team is kind of flipping the script on what we've known Atlanta sports to be the last, 8 to 10 years, at least. I mean, the 2012 NFC Championship game, we're up like 17-0, I think, at one point, blow it to the Niners. So this team is completely flipping the script. And I've got, you know, there's no secret we've made it known on the show that I've got the two TV set up down here. It's brilliant. You've been here before. And the main TV is the one where I got surround sound and stuff, and I had the Hawks game on there. Both TVs go out at halftime. I missed the last minute and a half of the Sixers game. Obviously, it's the same TV setup. I had to reset my whole system. And by the time I get the Hawks game back and up and running, the third quarter is starting. So I put it on the side TV. It's a 22-point game. And I put the Braves on the other TV because Dansby Swanson just hits a 3-run homer. He tied up at 6-6, right? Like, okay, well, the Braves game's to watch. I'm watching over here, though. And when they got it to, like, I think 15, I sat there and I was like, let me turn the volume up a little bit because this thing's coming. And then they got it to 11, and I sat up in my seat, and I was like, all right. And the neighbor's texting me. He's like, hey, we just got to get it. we just got to get it down a little bit more. And I'm like, yeah, dude, under 10 with under 5, and you got a chance. I mean, we literally had a drink after the game because I was so amped. I was so like, we were so hyped. It just needed to like take the edge off. Unbelievable, Chris. It's just unbelievable what they did last night. And it's something we've talked about on this pod, this show. The team that wins the game in this and wins a game during the series, each one, bench. The bench always does something. And once again, the bench created a spark. Second game in a row, Lou Williams had a great game for what he's been in the playoffs so far. And he was every bit what John Collins was in game 4.
So I want to read a tweet by our buddy Mike Conti that he put out after the game. The Hawks were down by 26 with 8:31 left in the third, 25 with 3:19 left in the third, 22 with 107 left in the third, 15 with 8:08 in the fourth, 14, 6:25 in the fourth, and 10 at 4:23 to go in this game. And you mentioned the bench, and I couldn't agree with you more. We more than doubled the output of the Sixers bench, and not to mention the only players to score for the Sixers were Seth Curry and Joel Embiid for the entire stretch of this game. It was pretty amazing. Now, Seth Curry did channel his brother, and he went off, and he was hitting shots from everywhere. And Joel Embiid clearly was not the same player in the second half of this game that he was in the first, because the way that that game started, the only thing I said out loud to myself in my apartment was, oh, no, because he looked like he turned back the clock and was getting everything he wanted. And you know what? Honestly, I felt bad for Clint because he was getting bodied. He was not able to keep up with Joel. But as this game went on, we showed our fight. We showed our resilience. Trey, listen, man, I don't even know what to say about this dude, because when I got to Atlanta 6 months ago, I had a certain perception of Trey. I thought he was a good player. I don't want to use the word gimmick player because I feel like that's a slight, but I thought he was a shooter. I thought he was a player that made a lot of threes, didn't play defense, and was in no way, shape, or form the guy who could be the best player on a winning team. I thought he was a piece. And boy, was I wrong. And boy, is it fun to watch. 39 last night. The floater was working. The threes were falling. And he was able to maintain his form despite the shoulder injury. Man, there's so many different angles to take for this one too, because these things in sports are so rare, and it's so awesome to witness them in real time, like we were able to last night. And it wasn't even one particular moment. And I think that's the best part, Bo. I think that it was a total team effort. I know Herter didn't have a good night again, but you can say, you can look up and down the roster from the starters to the bench and say, this guy had this play. JC had that huge three in the block at the end. Trey hit that huge three and he had the floater at the end of the game. You can say Clint picked up his defense in the second half. And that to me was the best part about this game. It wasn't one particular player or one particular moment. It was a group of guys coming together, and it's a cliche, but they really willed their way back into this game and eventually to a victory.
So I was talking about this with a neighbor and with another buddy of mine who's a huge Hawks fan. I don't want to say Doc has mismanaged Embiid's minutes, but Doc has mismanaged Embiid's minutes. I get that he's your best player. You got to play him. But it goes back to game 3 in Atlanta. They're blowing the Hawks out, and for some reason, Embiid comes back in the game when he didn't need to. Mm-hmm. And he takes that flop. And I feel like he's been different in the second half ever since that moment. You know, he's playing a lot of minutes. He's wearing down. He has not been the same player in the second half of the last 2 games. And I'd have to really go back and rewatch the second half of game 3. to see, but he's not the same player.
It's like at the start of every game, they give him the juice from Space Jam, and then it wears off by the time the second half starts.
Yeah, it's the Varsity Blues shot. They give him that shot. He feels great. And when that shot wears off, it's too late to go back in there, because by the time he comes back out, I mean, you can't have him off. You can't have him in there that long. By the time that shot would take, you know, kind of take effect, there's no, like, it was not even joke about it. I mean, I'm not saying they're putting him at risk, but he knows the risk when he takes a four, but he's definitely getting a cortisone shot and going out there and playing. I mean, it's laughable to that. Like, that's not happening. Okay. But it's funny because I think Trae Young's still not getting it. You know, I want to get this right. Their postseason debuts, Trae Young is now tied for the most 30-point games, or it's either 30 or 25-plus games in his career to start a postseason at 6 with LeBron James. I think Jordan's on there. Some good – Trae can break that. I mean, he's going to break it. And people want to, you know, get on the guy. And Nate used the lineup. I give Nate credit, and I do want to – and I want us, you and I, to talk about Doc Rivers for a minute, because that's part of this equation. But Nate has been criticized in his playoff coaching career. And he found a lineup last night that was working. And he said, by God, I'm not going away from it. And he mm-hmm. didn't. He left, you know, used to be Sweet Lou. Now it's Lemon Pepper Lou, or whatever they want to call him. He found some gold. You know what Lou's plus minus was in last night's game?
Tell it to me.
31 plus 31. And I'm telling you, I've been looking at every box score. And a lot of people don't like the plus minus because a lot of it's based on, you know, just – how your counterpart, I think, and I don't know the whole formula, I know part of it's how many, you know, how you outscore or the position and how it scores when you're on the floor. But I mean, the Hawks starters have been in minus all series. And the bench, when they win, they've been good. I mean, Dwight Howard and Thibault was a minus 14 and a minus 17, respectively. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just Korkmaz, who we talked about two episodes ago, he started off red hot. He had 8 points, I think, in the first half. He finished with 8 points. Mm-hmm. This team just, I don't know if they quit, if the Hawks made adjustments, but it brings me to this point, and I believe this point. I've been thinking this for a long time, not just this series, not just last year. It's been years. Doc Rivers is the most overrated coach in the history of the NBA.
Wow, there's a hot take for you. No, listen, I agree, and I think the only thing that could possibly save him is the fact that Ben Simmons has been an absolute zero in this series, and there's really nothing you can do about it. He's supposed to be your second-best player. He's supposed to be the Robin to Joel Embiid's Batman. And he, I think it's something like, has taken a total of 5 shots in the fourth quarter of all the games this series. I mean, he will not play offense. Listen, he got a $170 million contract from them. And he has not lived up to it at all in this series. I don't know his numbers from the previous series. I haven't looked them up yet. I certainly will. But when you have your second best player be an absolute zero, I agree that Doc is definitely overrated. Listen, man, our guys are stepping up. JC has been great the past couple games. You know, Gallo stepped up. So our guys that are supposed to be there are showing up. But when you have your number two giving you nothing, Bo, I don't know what Doc's supposed to do in that case. That's the only thing I can counter with.
The stat I saw earlier, and I'm going to butcher it because I don't recall it completely, but Doc Rivers has 6 of the six double digit. I'll just put it this way because it was a different stat, but he's got six double digit blown leads in like the last 2-3 years of the playoffs. He did it with the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Remember that run that the Rockets went on a few years ago when Harden was on the bench and they were beating the brakes off the Rockets, and I think it was like a 40-15 run or something. And it was Corey Brewer and company. It wasn't even James Harden.
Corey Brewer.
Hey, yeah. Hey, we don't talk bad about Corey Brewer here. Back-to-back national champion, University of Florida. That's my dog. But I'm telling you, Doc only won one title with the Big Three in Boston. And he barely won that. He barely got out of the first round against the Hawks team that was essentially led by Joe Johnson and Zaza Pachulia.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who underachieves. He's a classic underachiever. It's why he's on his third job, I believe, in the NBA. He's overrated. He's overrated. He's not as good. He's had great players and gotten good results in his career.
So I think if we get anything from Bogey and Herter in the next game, and Capella too, because Capella, but again, I feel bad for Capella because he is a tough assignment, man. I don't know if it's fair for us to expect much offensively for the rest of this series, because being the primary defender on Embiid is a really, really tough assignment. And he's just, the guy's twice the size. But if we get anything from Bogey and Herter, I mean, can Tony Snell hit a couple buckets? I really think we can close it out on Friday night at State Farm. I think the momentum has totally shifted now. It's all in the Hawks' favor. It's their series to lose. I was wrestling with this before we got on. I don't know if the Sixers come back and take the next two games, if it's fair to call it a disappointment when you factor in the expectations going into the season. But I think at the bare minimum, we say that this is their series to lose, and they have the absolute perfect opportunity to close it out on Friday. And there's a couple things I think we need to do. The guys that I just listed need to step up, and we need to attack Embiid early and often, because he can't get off to the start that he got off to in this game, because we can't take the risk and assume that he's going to just keep having these poor second halves. Because if he doesn't and his knee's feeling good in the second half and he goes off for 25, we're going to be in trouble. So I think if we attack Embiid often, Bogey doesn't get in foul trouble like he did last game. Herter rebounds from a couple tough games. But look, we saw JC. JC had a couple rough games early in the series, and now he's bounced back nicely. So I think Herter can do the same. I really think we can close this thing out. I don't know if we can call it a disappointment if they lose, but I definitely think all the momentum is in the Hawks' favor now.
You know why it's not a disappointment? Because if I had told you that I went 30 for 30 on you. But if I had told you though that Embiid was going to play almost 40 minutes in every game of this series, and essentially at one point he was, 39, 40, 27, 17, 37. And you'd be up 3-2 going into game six. You'd have taken it.
Yeah. Yep.
If I did, a lot of people when this series started didn't think the Hawks had a chance. So it's not a disappointment. You're going to be disappointed, but you don't look at the playoff run as a disappointment. This is these guys' first experience, most of them. Trey, Herter, Bogey, I'm pretty sure.
They didn't make the playoffs in Sacramento.
Yeah. Collins, Young.
Okongwu. Lou and Solo were really the only ones with playoff experience in the bunch.
I think
Gallo has some too.
But I told you, you would have had the Sixers on the ropes. You'd have won two games on the road. The problem is you got to start fast. Like to your point, you said attacking, and I agree. Start fast. Because here's where the Sixers are. They've quit when you made runs. And I say, I use quit lose, but look, they choked last night. They choked. Embiid had two free throws. Choked. He missed them. He's a good free throw shooter. Yeah, he's not Shaq at the free throw line. I mean, he's not. And they choked. They're make them quit. They're doubting themselves. You come in, and if you can put two halves together, and what I mean by that is you can put a first half tomorrow night, like you finished the second half with, they might just quit. Because I've seen Ben Simmons quit before. He'll quit again. I ain't like Ben Simmons is going to
– He's yeah, I don't – listen, that is a nightmare in Philly right now. I don't know what the hell they're going to do with him because I don't think there's a team in the NBA that would take him off your hands after his showing. All right, let me ask you this. Let's dream a little bit. And obviously, if we get to this point, we will break it down like a fine powder as we do everything else on this podcast. Would you rather the Nets or the Bucks?
The Bucks. The Bucks. Because Durant and Harden, they're going to score. And Harden's gonna, he'll be better if they can get through it. You don't know when Kyrie will be back, but the thought of that big three scares me a lot more than the big three in Milwaukee. I don't mind. To me, Capella against Giannis is actually better for Capella than it is with him against Embiid. I think Embiid's better right now. I think Embiid showed he's better. And
well, Giannis hasn't shot well in this playoffs. That's the key. Giannis is getting all of his points inside.
You know what? Embiid's done it from everywhere.
Yep.
And he's hurt. And so as much as I don't like him. I don't like the way he plays, the flopping crap. He tried to punk Capella last night, and Capella stood up. He still had a good game, but Capella didn't let him punk him. He didn't let him get in his face, and I like that. I'd rather play the Bucks. I would.
I think I would too. And there's obviously the fun Coach Bud angle, but I'm just talking about from a basketball standpoint. The Bucks are definitely shooting. It's crazy to say because if you looked at it before the series, you would find it almost impossible to say that you would think the Bucks are shooting better than the Nets, given the players that are on the Nets. But for those who are unfamiliar with Joe Harris, he's the Nets' fourth guy. He is a great shooter. And he is having a historically bad playoff performance. So if he was able to find any sort of rhythm, I think that's actually been the difference in this series, obviously notwithstanding the injuries to the Stars. His lack of when I say he's been an absolute zero, he's been what Kevin Herter's been for us the past two games, but worse, if you can actually imagine that. The Bucks have been much more consistent shooting the basketball, especially from three. They've been on fire. So I do agree, though, that just the overall the scary nature of facing that core for the Nets, but it is. I mean, it's a daunting task. I don't know if the Hawks would be up for it. So I do agree, but I think it's safe to say, and the point of me asking the question is, I think we can play with anybody. I think even if it is the Nets, I don't think we get swept. I think we're able to hold our own in any series, basically, at this point. Because, Bo, if you look at the West, given what happened yesterday – with Kawhi and Chris Paul, and the Jazz aren't healthy right now. I turned on John and you this morning, and their big question of the day was, can the Hawks win a title? So clearly the question's being asked, but I just wanted to get your perspective on that, and I definitely think we're on the same page. So you know what we do before we get out of here. It's prediction time, baby. Do we close this thing out at home on Friday night?
I think we do. I think I think the crowd is going to be so amped. They're going to be in the I would assume that they'll be in the MLK jerseys.
They are. It's that confirmed. Confirmed so, MLK jerseys.
So I think they're going to they have more confidence in those. I think they're going to come out and I think they're going to be they're just going to be feeding off the crowd, and I want to see how Embiid and Simmons react because they've what do you do to bullies? You punch them in the face, and 95% of the time, the bully will back down.
Mm-hmm.
They've tried to bully the Hawks all series. They know they're bigger. They've tried to bully them. Embiid's tried to play bully ball along with flopper ball or whatever you want to call it. Punch them right in the face. Punch them square in the nose. See what they do. Because I think they're going to fold. So I think that's the Hawks mentality. And I think they come out and I think they drop 117-105. I think they win going away. I think the Sixers just quit. I really do. I think you can make them. I could be very well wrong. I eat my words, but I think if you play this right, you could make them quit and then just keep the foot on the gas, because if you can close in six, I think that other series is going seven. So you'll get an extra day or two before you start. So finish it. Finish them. And I think Gallinari has a big night because, you know, he hit probably one of the biggest shots of last night to basically ice the game. And it was a tough shot. And I think he might be the guy who kind of is that performance that's kind of an outlier. And by the way, if you're on John Collins' back, just get on the hell off of it. Because, again, 19-11, that's what John Collins needs to do in the playoffs. That's a John Collins the Hawks need. So if you want to talk about how he's got to do more, don't tell me he's got to do more. He's done more. And that's why they won the last two games. That's why they're up three games. That's one of the factors that's contributed to that 3-2 series lead right now going into game six in Atlanta.
So I've definitely been the more pessimistic one out of the two of us throughout this podcast as we make our predictions at the end of each episode. But after what I saw last night, Bo, there's no way you can doubt this team anymore. They were down 26 points with less than a half of basketball to play, and they won the game. We've both been watching sports our entire lives, and we've both seen some pretty crazy things, both in general and for the teams we root for. This is right up there. I think the atmosphere, the crowd is going to be insane. Tickets to get on the floor going for $19,000 on the secondary market. Yes, you heard that correctly. $19,000. So you know everyone's coming. And I think you're right. I think we saw a lot of quit in the Sixers at the end of that game. Ben Simmons is a zero. Harris wanted no part of the snuff in the fourth quarter. Seth Curry's not going to drop 37 again. Hawks take this thing, baby. 115-108 is the final at State Farm on Friday night. And we await the winner of the Nets and the Bucks.
Hey, before we get out of here real quick.
Yes.
Have you been disappointed in Tobias Harris's performance?
No, actually, no. Until last night. I actually think he's been their second best player. I didn't realize he had the shot-making ability that he has. I didn't realize he was that good of a player. He's had a couple good seasons where he's averaged like 18 or 19, but I thought he was more of like a streaky sharpshooter. No, he creates his own shot. He can dribble the ball. He can bring the ball up the floor. I've actually been really impressed with Tobias Harris. But that said, he completely melted. He wanted nothing to do with those big moments last night. So, yes and no, I guess.
See, I've always liked Tobias. I think he's one of the guys I mentioned when we did the preview for this series. And really, to your point, last night was really his disappearing act. He just fell off. I've always liked Tobias Harris. I was, as you said, disappointed last night in him. And I think he missed some – I'd have to go back and really do some checking on his game four performance. But if I remember right, he kind of disappeared in that game as well. He still had like 20, but I think a lot of that was early. I've always liked Tobias Harris. I actually thought he might be one of the things that helped the Sixers win the series if they want it. And so, yeah, I am. Yeah, a little bit. You know, I don't want to hear injuries. I don't want to hear about Danny Green, by the way, being out either.
Or yeah, he did absolutely no. No, he was doing nothing.
If you can play 40 minutes, which Embiid's pretty much has, you know, you're dropping that points. Man, maybe a healthy Embiid would have. What, you know, get it this year, guys, because I don't want to face healthy Embiid next year.
No, and you know what? The guys like Shake Milton and Furkan Korkmaz have given you the production that a Danny Green would have given you, and then some anyway. All right. Forbo Morgan, executive producer of Dukes and Bell. I am Chris Thomas, fellow producer for Dukes and Bell. This is the Hawks Instant Reaction Podcast. We are going to be talking to you next after a Game 6 Hawks series victory over the Philadelphia 76ers and awaiting the start of the Eastern Conference Finals. Who the hell would have thought we'd be saying that when the season got started? Can't wait to talk to you guys after the game on Friday. Enjoy this one, Atlanta. Get some sleep, because I know I didn't sleep well last night. We'll talk to you guys after the game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.